Good morning. I'm Donna Quinn. And for the next half hour, you'll be listening to Talk of Our Towns. The Astoria Public Library has a brand new executive director who's going to bring in fresh energy with great ideas. I've just been speaking with Jimmy Pearson before we got on the air today, and I am really excited to see what's going to happen at the Astoria Library. So this program today is going to introduce you to Astoria Public Library's brand new executive director, Jimmy Pearson. Hi, Jimmy.
Hi, good morning, Donna.
I'm so happy that you're here today.
Thank you.
You've just been on the ground here since what, October, mid-October?
Since October, yes.
All right, excellent. Well, before we start talking about all things library, let's talk about Jimmy Pearson. Please tell us a little bit about your background so the listening audience can get to know you a little bit since you're a brand new Astorian.
So a couple of things. I wanted to say hi, Mom, because I know she'll be listening later.
And where's Mom?
In Virginia.
Okay.
And also, I wore too much makeup, but I thought, you know, I didn't know that radio was, you didn't have to worry about that.
That's so funny. I know. People say, oh, they've got a face for radio. Okay.
Right. So I was actually, I hail from Ypsilanti, Michigan. My father was a Navy petty officer, so we've moved all over the place as a kid. I've lived on the West Coast and South Carolina. He retired out of Memphis, Tennessee, went back up to Michigan where I joined the Army at the age of 18. And so I've lived all over the country. I've served in Germany and Korea, San Antonio, Texas, West Point, New York. Beautiful places. So I've seen the country and a couple places in the world.
And so you went into the Army because your father had been in the military, and you were there as a medic, or what was your position?
So I went in the Army because my father and three uncles were in the Navy.
And okay,
if you've ever seen on board ship, you sleep in about 18 to 24 inches of space. I would prefer more, and I, you know, to turn over and sleep at night or whatever. So I joined the Army. I was a combat medic when I first went in. I had a break in service, and when I went back, they changed the term to healthcare specialist. So a little bit friendlier and a little bit more civilian friendly. So if you were looking for a job in the civilian world, it made a little bit more sense. If you say you're combat medic, you think one thing.
Oh, that's true. So how did you come from being in the military? Did you enjoy being in the military?
I actually loved it. It was a privilege to serve, and I retired in 2012.
And then how did you become a library director?
I found my way into libraries in Houston, Texas during a break in service and started out as a paraprofessional, earned my master's degree working for Houston Public Library, and became a children's librarian for a couple of months before I accepted my first management position with the Harris County Library System, where I managed one branch and then two branches in an urban area, gangs and drugs. And my background in the military pretty much prepared me for that. And then I joined the Army Reserves and had an opportunity to come back on active duty, which led me to Denver, Colorado, where I eventually retired.
And so you were a librarian in Houston,
mm-hmm.
and then you were a librarian at a big library, and then you moved to Denver, which is where you're coming from now, right?
Right.
You just have left Denver to come to us.
I have.
And I love the story. So the Daily A had an article too about you being a retired U.S. Army sergeant and a medic. And then you're just like an Astoria, because Astoria is all about juxtaposition. Things that don't seem to go together somehow do,
right.
Really well. So, okay, Army and librarian, yes. So tell us about how you found Astoria, because I think that's a great story that our listeners would enjoy.
Last year, my wife and I, we hadn't had a vacation in 4 years, and we were tossing around ideas of where to go. We'd go back to the East Coast, see my parents, her parents. And finally, I just said, babe, you love the Goonies. You've talked about it. Missed the 30th anniversary. Let's just go. We flew into Portland on a Sunday. We stayed in Cannon Beach. Came up here on a Wednesday to eat breakfast, Stephanie's Cabin, great pancakes. and I went over to the library after getting a haircut because I felt like it was too long, and got a library card and bought a library card for a collection. We don't give library cards just out to people that aren't here. And they said, oh, the library director's retiring. Went back the next day when we checked out of our hotel in Cannon Beach and had a 2-hour conversation with Jane and ended up applying, came back in August and saw the sun. And hadn't seen much of the sun in March, saw the sun, and we're here now. I started in October.
That's a great story. So I know there were many, there were like 30 people, and then down to three finalists.
Right.
And they chose you. And I can see one of the reasons is because of your enthusiasm, your love for not only books and stories, but also human relationships, because it's all about relationships, isn't it?
It's about building relationships for me. And I think that's what libraries can do. And that's what I hope to accomplish here is, of course, we, you know, the elephant in the room, the library renovation, that is something that is ongoing as a discussion for the community. And I hope to build relationships with people while we figure out what that looks like.
Exactly. So just a quick piece on library renovation. Well, actually, you know what? And Joan Herman, I know on Perspectives, is going to do a program at another time next year to kind of dig deeper into the renovation piece. But I love what you said, which is it's not about the building. It's about the people inside and what's inside the building. The treasure is inside. The library is the people and the books and the computers and all that. But maybe for those listeners who aren't familiar, what is the history of that particular building and the library itself?
So the Astoria Library as it stands was built and dedicated in October of 1967. Bruce Birney was the librarian at the time. He was Jane's predecessor. His mother was a historian in the community, and I think that passed on to him, so he's collected a lot of history within the Astoriana collection. I met him on Friday, had the privilege of meeting Bruce. He came in and sat in his old office, and we had a conversation, and he answered a couple of questions that have been burning in my mind, like, what about this, and where was this, and the main dedication was held in the main area, and Lord Astor stood there. And so I actually have a Lord Astor speech in the Astoriana collection, the typewritten notes, handwritten notes from Lord Astor signed by him in the corner, because Bruce asked him, can you sign it and then give it to the library as part of the Astoriana collection, which is all things Astoria. So really some cool things on that wall that's in the library that talk about the history of Astoria.
Yeah, the library was built in 1967, and that was a really big deal. They spent a lot of money, and at that time, that kind of architecture, which I think is called
Brutalist
architecture. Yeah, so it has its own unique place in the world. Before we start talking about your duties as the 14th librarian, what has been your impression of Astoria so far and of the people you've been meeting?
You know, my wife and I have talked about this a lot. She's a retail manager, and usually this time of year is just really horrible for her. In some places, retail brings out the worst in people. People are actually nice. And, you know, she gets to go home at night because nobody's trashing the store, and they're actually talking to her when she comes in the door, and they're asking her questions, and everybody I've met, they introduce themselves. So many names have floated through in 2 months. Somebody fixing the steps in front of the library, and he's like, have you been to the co-op yet? I'm on the board of the co-op. And everyone here does something outside of who they are, and there's so much giving back. I was part of the Gifts for Giving on Saturday, and so many organizations, and there's such a caring undercurrent that people actually, I think, care for their neighbors and actually think about their welfare. It's been phenomenal.
It is a very connected community, and in large part also because this radio station, I think, plays a huge role in that. And you're right, there are over 100 nonprofits here, and people volunteer, and this town runs on volunteers. It has it just has that heartbeat here on the North Coast, and so I'm so happy that you've been having a good experience meeting people here. I think people are very welcoming. And if people volunteer, there always is a place in the community for them. Mm-hmm. I mentioned, and I want to just tell our listeners that when I just met Jimmy this morning, I was reminded of meeting Chris Breitmeyer, who's the new president at Clatsop Community College, because both of them have an enthusiasm and a joy and a great energy and warmth that I think is going to transform not only Clatsop but also the library. I'm looking really forward to seeing what you're going to do there. So you're coming into the library at a point where In July, the Astoria City Council voted not to build a multi-million dollar library in Heritage Square, but instead they directed city staff to study, you know, how to renovate the existing 50-year-old kind of library. And so that's kind of happening, and so that's ongoing. However, you're coming in as a director, and what are the kinds of responsibilities you're going to be undertaking?
So right now I have two vacancies that are key to moving forward with the library. Patty Skinner, our longtime children's person, will be retiring as of tomorrow. Please join us at the library from 5 to 7 to celebrate her tenure as our children's librarian. Started the story times at the library, filling her vacancy, and also Amy Kreider is leaving us and will be moving on to bigger and better things, so filling her position as well, hopefully with someone that some two positions, one children's focused and one adult and family focused for programming. Those will be key, I think, to moving us forward as far as services and what we can do and fill a niche within the community.
How many staff does the library have right now?
So we have a total of 9. We have 3 full-time, myself and 2 others, and then 6 part-time.
Okay. And so your responsibilities, though, are going to be circulation, programs, staff training and development, collection development, community outreach. Can you talk a little bit about each of those?
So as a librarian, just as a generalist, you do some sort of all of those together. When it comes to collection development, you're usually assigned a portion of the collection to specialize in, and mine has always been young adult because that's kind of, I get along with teenagers really well, except if they share my last name or then we have issues. But so as a director, you're looking at a larger picture. So you're looking at the total budget for collection development and where it's being divided. And those are things that I'm assessing right now, services that we're providing. I'm hoping with hiring the right people that we can push forward. And we do 2 story times a month. What would it look like to maybe possibly, or 2 story times a week, I'm sorry. What would it be like to add maybe another one if there's a need, or maybe even a Spanish language one if we can find someone to do that for us? With the adult programming, we're feeling a niche. Amy said that there are people that, you know, there's a lot of offering after hours, and Fort George has things, Bowie does some things, and, you know, we're kind of figuring out where we belong in all of that.
Exactly, because you have the flag room, and we'll talk about that in the second half of the program. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Talk of Our Towns. I'm your host, Donna Quinn. Today, I'm talking with brand new Astoria Public Library Executive Director Jimmy Pearson, who comes to us from Denver, Colorado. And so far, he and his wife, and your wife's name is?
Monica.
Monica. And so far, Jimmy and Monica are really enjoying the North Coast. And you have a lot on your plate, though, with the library. So the flag room. The flag room is rented out to groups for lectures, is that mostly what happens in there?
It's like a meeting room in a library. There's a policy for usage, and you come in and you fill out the application, and you can use it for your event that you have. I'm in the process right now. It's used primarily for story time. There's a Write Astoria group that meets 2 Wednesdays a month. That's where we hold our library board meetings. That's where Patty's retirement will be held. I'm in the process of kind of getting some items out of the flag room, and in the last couple of days have been cleaning it up and getting it a little bit more organized. Our friends of the library has purchased some items that will give us some better storage options for tables and story time supplies that can be kind of hidden away while it's maybe used for a lecture series or an author visit. Make it a little bit streamlined, a little bit more open, more appealing for groups to use.
You know, we should talk about how the library is funded, actually, because you do have friends of the library, and they raise money, because when you donate money to the library, it is a 501c3, right?
I believe so, yes.
So they're able to, and obviously Friends of the Library is a really important organization. You need that because you have a small staff.
Right.
And you're trying to do many things. So what do you see as some of the needs? Like, you're talking about circulation and programs. You're looking at some new programs.
So the Friends, I traditionally have provided money for programs, and some of the authors coming in, they've provided money for, I think at one time an example would be somebody said we needed more gardening books, and they were able to come up with, I think, $500 to buy just gardening books. So it's a really great way to leverage the funds that we are a city funded agency, just like Parks and Rec, Public Works. So it really is nice to have some other organization that can leverage that. They're the ones paying for the storage items for the flag room. They also pay for the printing supplies. When you print a sheet of paper, that money is Alpha. You know, they're providing that printer. They bought it. And it's nice to have them. And we're kind of figuring out our role, you know, as I'm coming in new. What does it look like moving forward?
Exactly. I know I read that you were going to implement a software program for the library's computer system and maybe possibly a new printer vending machine kind of thing.
So the software is already in play or in the process of happening. What that will do is you currently come up to the counter, you ask for a computer, we ask for your name, and we write down the time that you come in and you get an hour on the computer. The software program will automate that. You can come in if you have a library card, have a seat at the computer. You can bypass the staff. For me, it's also a privacy issue. You know, you're coming in using the computer. I don't want to know. As a librarian, you want to be careful about, you know, okay, who's using it or why. It's just an open, you know, freedom of access. And you can have a seat, use the computer. But it also helps leverage staff time. And so some of the other things that I'd like to do with outreach and maybe even with programming, it takes sometimes two people to help with that.
Sure.
And so keeping a human component at the desk and having that person there is important to me, but also finding ways that we can save staff time and use it more efficiently.
I know that you have talked about the fact that libraries are lifelines, that they can make a difference. Could you tell me some stories about that and why you feel that way?
You know, I've had encounters in my time as a librarian, and here in a story I think is the same way. Sometimes we may be the only social interaction for an individual in a day. You know, you may have recently gone through a divorce, or you may have lost a loved one, and you come into the library, and that we may be the only people that say hello, or how are you, or form some kind of relationship.
And smile at you.
And smile. I mean, the library is the staff, you know, and I have a collection of some of the best staff members that I've ever worked with in a library. They truly care about the people that come in, to the point where you can come in and they'll know that you're here to pick up a hold because they see you and know you, and there you are. It's that kind of relationship building that is, one, it's great customer service, but not even in a business sense. It's just great human being. It's just being together.
Yes, absolutely. I think, you know, I've talked about this before, that we are tribal people. We are, and even though we do have the ease of having our home computers, most of us have those, but not everyone. And, you know, we're isolated still at home if we're just working with technology and just coming in and you mentioned before we went on the air that when children come in, maybe there's a little girl or boy who's being kind of, you know, picked on or you know, at school. And then you say, hey, how's your day going? Or, hey, have you what about this book? I mean, that does, those things make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about libraries in the world today with all of the technology, where do you see computers as opposed to books? And for me, I know I rent a lot of audiobooks at the library because I travel a lot, and those really help with those long drives. So how do you kind of see all that working?
You know, there's been talk since I've worked in libraries. Libraries are going away. They're not relevant. They're not. Books are going away. I've not seen it yet. Books are still here. Books are still being published. There are people that like audiobooks. Myself, I read a lot of electronic books on my e-reader. I have an iPad mini that I will read a lot of my items on because I like having the choice. I might have 10 books going at a time just because depending on the mood that I'm in. But there's also some books that I like in a paper form. I buy the World Almanac every year just because I've challenged kids before. Okay, your book, your internet and your phone against my world book, and let's see who can find the answer first. You know, so that they're never going away. They're changing how we Sorry, I'm grasping for the word that I'm looking for. We're changing how we deliver the information. The information's changing, but it's not, there's always going to be a need for information. And librarians are experts at that and finding ways of getting it into the people's hands.
Yes, and you're right. If librarians know, excuse me, the patrons, then they can match them with certain books. They can say, oh, here's a favorite. Here's one I think you might enjoy. So again, I think you're right. It's human relationships. How many books are there anyway at the library? Do we know?
You know, I would take a guess and say around 60,000 maybe. I'd have to ask Anne for a report.
Uh-huh, right.
You know, that's something that I've given some thought to but not dug into
sure,
yet.
Sure, of course. Yeah.
There's enough for now.
Yes, there's something for everyone at the Astoria Public Library. That's the important thing. So I know you talked about community outreach. And is your desire and hope then that more people will get library cards and use the library more and give you interaction, feedback about, hey, what about this? Or I'd like to see this or that happen there.
I would love to see every Astorian have a card. I mean, to me, it's also a gathering place for the community. So some of the things that I'm doing with the flag room and taking some of the items in it it's not a storage area, and making it more open, being able to fill it to capacity, getting the people into the library to actually, you know, maybe begin the conversation of the more I have interaction with people, the more I know what they're looking for, the more able we're better to tailor our services to what we can do for the community.
I love going in and seeing people reading, you know, newspapers from all around the world or mm-hmm. magazines, things that you wouldn't be able to find anywhere else except at the library. What about this idea that in the past libraries were like, oh, shh, can't talk, be quiet. And because people are reading and you do want to give them that. And I do better when I don't have a lot of background noise, whereas, you know, my daughter can be reading, painting, doing something and still have on, you know, radio or music or other people talking and it doesn't bother her. But so how there's that kind of tension between the library is we want to be quiet so that people can focus and read. And yet you want to be warm and fun and engaging. So how does that work?
I've managed that in the past in my other buildings. My first library I managed every day after school when we had around 60 to 90 kids in my first library. I'd open the meeting room, we call it teen time, and for 3 hours I put a staff member in there, took the kids off the floor, gave them something positive to do, and then left the main floor open for other options. Libraries also, especially newer libraries, are being built with quiet zones, dedicated areas. For my library in Denver was 26,000 square feet. So after school, when we were averaging 150 to 200 kids, we actually had an area by the fireplace that I put off limits as a quiet zone. So kids in one side of the library where they could be kids, and I'm also hard of hearing, so that doesn't bother me as much as some people, but also respecting the fact that some people do work better in a quieter environment.
Yeah, that's true. So this is such a difference, though, for you, because coming from huge libraries to suddenly a small library where you're the director, everything comes down to you. And why don't you tell that story about getting your business cards?
Christmas came early for me this year when Brett offered me the job formally. So anything after that's just icing on the cake. So I received my business cards, and, you know, it's the first time for me as being a director versus a branch manager. And they're beautiful. The city works with the printer. They come in this really nice little box, and they have a little sticker on them. Looks really nice and well packaged. I took a picture of them, put them on my personal Facebook page. And then 2 days later, got the bill.
That's right. The buck stops there.
The
you
buck
are
stops
it.
Here. So yeah, it's interesting, you know, that's the change from branch management to directorship with a little bit different responsibilities.
Right, exactly. And you're getting the heating bill, the lighting bill,
right.
All of those things. So these are all different things. What are you the most excited about being here in Astoria and being director of the Astoria Public Library right now?
You know, I said it in the article, I love being a librarian. I'm loving being a director here in Astoria. I'm loving meeting the individuals around town and who they are and who they represent. And I'm actually excited about what we can do for the community and getting the right, like I said earlier, getting the right people in place to take over for Patty. I mean, to move her legacy forward. Early literacy can be difficult in this area. So I'm also a board member for the Rural Opportunities for Clatsop County, which puts a free library card in kids' hands that otherwise wouldn't have them. It's been proven that reading, starting early or whatever, means success later in life. I'm passionate about that, and I think that that's where we're going to be able to find our most rewarding experiences.
Oh, exactly. And, you know, there are some in some of the little neighborhoods around Astoria, and I think actually they were trying to get some out into some of the rural areas. There are those little free libraries,
mm-hmm.
which I think are wonderful.
And that fundraiser is coming up again. If you want to build one, we auctioned them last year. They did before I arrived. I think that raised about $5,000 for that initiative for the free library cards. And they're beautiful. It's a great ideal as well.
So, okay, so then that's something that people, because I was going to ask you, like, what can people do to support the Astoria Public Library? And, okay, so you can, if you want to, you can make this a project with your best friend or with your family or with your children and build a free little library. And the Astoria Public Library has the specifications.
We will, yes.
Okay, and that'll be coming up in the future here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what else, how else can people engage with and support the Astoria Public Library?
I think the first thing is walk through the doors.
Okay, that's good.
You know, that's step number one. Walk through the doors, look around, take a look around, get a library card. Eric found out at the Daily Astoria, and he left with his. And as did Danny, the photographer, they both left with library cards when they came to see me. If you come see me, or if I see you out in town, I'm going to tell you, well, I've seen you, now you come see me. You know, I think that's where the conversation starts. You come into the building, check us out, see what we've got to offer. You might rediscover something from your past that, wow, this is the place to be.
That's right. Well, and it can be. I mean, the library in a city, if you go to a new place, I always feel like you go to the library. Typically, there's a bulletin board or there's something. You mm-hmm. find out what's going on in the community because the library is kind of the hub. It's the heart of the community.
Right.
And so I think that under your leadership, there's going to be some exciting stuff happening at the library now.
I hope so.
Yeah. No, I feel very positive. Any last things? We're just running out of time. Any last things you'd like the listening audience to know about either you or the Astoria Public Library?
Nope. I think we've covered it all. I thank you all for being patient with me. It's a little bit awkward having a conversation into a microphone. I hope I didn't do too poorly.
No, you're great.
I'd like to say hello to my daughter, Allison, who's going to listen to this and go, great, Dad, you're introducing me to everybody around town.
No, she starts Clatsop.
She starts Clatsop in January.
Welcome, Allison. We are so excited you're here. And Allison, even though your father said that you have a sophisticated taste because we were raised in San Francisco, correct?
Right.
I think you will find that in Astoria, there are so many incredible, culturally exciting things going on. This is a very rare and unique community, and we are thrilled to have you and your family here.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Jimmy Pearson. So stop in at the Astoria Public Library and meet Jimmy Pearson. Thank you, Kate Brister, for being our engineer today, and my gratitude to local talented banjo instructor Michael Bruin for his original theme music for this program. Until next week, find a moment for yourself today. Take a deep breath. It's such a good thing to do for your body, for your mind, for your spirit. And then focus on all the things that are going well in your life. There will always be those things that don't go well, but focus on the good things. And then give yourself a loving and compassionate hug or a pat on the back for being uniquely you, the only one, for doing the best you can, and for being here now, in this moment, the only moment which exists, the now moment, on the amazing planet we call Earth.